Jan Liszewski, welcome to WRTI.
Great to be here. Thank you so much.
You have such a busy career in what's been a really busy life. You began playing the piano at 5, played your first orchestral concert at 9, and now you're playing all over the world. When last we spoke, you were in Philadelphia playing 3 Mozart concertos over the same weekend.
Yes, that was a memorable weekend. Well, certainly, it was good. It was very fun Mozart festival.
Well, now you're playing Mendelssohn's first piano concerto with the orchestra, and it's the first track on your new CD. What draws you to the music of Mendelssohn?
Mendelssohn's music is so fine, so elegant, so crisp, so simple, and yet complex. That balance, that juxtaposition makes his music different. He has his own language, and I always enjoy playing his music because I'm immersed in him. It's only him, and you know it's Mendelssohn. Somebody said that it's effervescent, and I think that's a great word because it has this quality of joyfulness, even when it isn't so joyful.
So the first piano concerto in particular, are there certain things that he does? You say it's simple and complex at the same time.
Yes, I mean, my passage work seems endless, and it's as if Mendelssohn was 1 foot out the door in the romantic world and 1 foot still in the classical. I can compare very easily this concerto to Mozart, where Mozart has the same, in my belief, touch required for the passage work that he writes. At first glance, it just looks like endless 16th notes, and which contain no melodic content. And yet, when you learn it, when you understand what it's about, then you suddenly understand, oh yes, there's all this and more in the music, but it's daunting. The task is daunting at first, because it isn't something that you look at the score and at first glance you can understand the essence of it.
He wrote this first concerto when he was pretty young. Do you consider his history when you approach a piece?
It's always good to understand it for yourself. But I think, if anything, these concertos and Mendelssohn and other great composers prove that age and history and their circumstance don't necessarily matter in what they write. Because if we were to take this aside as a piece without knowing who it's by and how old Mendelssohn happened to be when he wrote it, it's simply a masterpiece. And that goes the same case for Mozart, for his works when he was young, or Chopin. You can't tell. It's only when we know and later how where it fits in, and when we know the complete volume of his works and how he grew and how he changed, that we can then place it. But from first glance, that wouldn't be possible.
When did you decide to do a whole album of Mendelssohn?
Actually, I decided very quickly after having first played Mendelssohn a few years ago, his concertos, I mean, in concert, and I decided I really loved them, and I was curious why I don't play them, why nobody plays them. I mean, you don't hear them programmed very often on the stage. And I thought the best way to improve the situation on concert stage was to record it. And I'm very happy because I'm glad to report it's been a success. And not only did I record it, but now I see in my calendar for the next seasons that I'm playing Mendelssohn a lot and everywhere in the world.
Well, now that you are playing his music so much and you have recorded it, are you continually finding new insights?
Of course. That's always the case. And that's the risk you run. But especially for somebody of my age, I've not had the lifetime to live with Mendelssohn's music. I'm new with any music, basically. I touch or haven't spent 20, 30 years with it. So what I hope always is that the recording is a capture of me performing that music at that moment, at that time. I hope that I will be able to stand by it and be proud of it in the years to come.
And let's talk about the rest of the music on the album. You chose to record the 2 piano concerti with 3 other works. How did you make those choices?
When I first conceptualized this recording, I knew right away that I wanted to include the Variations Sérieuses and the Rondo Capriccioso. And the third piece you're referring to is a song without word, a Venetian gondola song, and that one I decided as an encore. But somehow in my mind, when I heard the concertos and when I knew what else Mendelssohn had written for the piano, with the Variations Sérieuses being one of the most important of his works for solo piano, I thought that it would fit together on one recording. And the placement and the order on the CD as well, although I realize that people nowadays listen to music on the radio, in streaming services, not necessarily from the days of the LP where they would just listen from beginning to end, but those that do, I hope, will be rewarded with the order and the placement of the pieces.
Could you talk a little more about that? What story do they tell placed the way they are?
I think there's an art to putting together a program, be it a symphonic concert or a recital program, or in this case, on an album. And the way pieces interact with each other because of the order is also very important to how they are perceived by the audience.
You chose to record it with the Orpheus Chamber Orchestra, which doesn't have a conductor. So how did that work?
Well, I've had plenty of experience working with no conductor, but what makes Orpheus special is that, first of all, they always work with no conductor. Plus, they also don't have a leader. Usually when there isn't a conductor, then naturally the concertmaster becomes the sort of de facto conductor. Here, every musician has an equal role to play, just like it should be, and they're equally dedicated, which is remarkable and which makes for, I think, a very good final result, because they all know not only their own parts, but the entire score, and I think they bring their own ideas to the music then.
So you'd get comments from the woodwind players? Or?
Oh, certainly. And then, of course, the follow-up question to that is, how on earth then do you work when you have, you know, this many musicians, each one of whom has a personal idea, right? How can you get through a rehearsal? How do you get a recording? And I mean, this recording is proof that it's possible, because we had 2 days of sessions only and a very, very tight schedule. Where I think it's most noticeable is that each musician would focus on making sure that their part is prepared the best, to make it easier for them, to facilitate a certain solo. If they would comment, it would be because they heard something and they believe that it wasn't quite right. You could really feel this when in the booth, in those 15-minute breaks during the session where everybody, you know, needs to run to the washroom and relax and not play and just sort of prepare to mentally, again, be in the zone for another hour, you would have 15 to 20 musicians in the booth listening, trying to hear, asking to hear a certain part, asking if they sounded okay to the producer, asking if we have a certain section already, if they can hear it. With ideas, with notes in the score, like, okay, I have to come go hear this later. That's never happened to me before, and I was very inspired by it.
So once you have an experience like that, and you record these works that you've studied and have become part of you, then you take it to other orchestras, take this music to other orchestras. What is that like? How does that change your approach, especially when you now have a conductor?
Well, I am looking forward to being inspired by Maestro Nezis again, who I'm sure will inspire, because he never fails to, and who will bring new light to the music. But that's just the beauty of creation, of interpretation, of performance on stage, is that it will never be the same, and that there isn't a concrete better or worse. So there's nothing to be afraid of, and you just always work for a better final result, if anything.
There's so much going on in your life professionally, and the last time we spoke, you talked about you were studying in Toronto at the time, and you talked about enjoying life in the moment and hiking and swimming and skiing and travel. Do you still have that balance?
Of course. The fact is that you do have to live your life, and you're given every day only once, which means you have to do everything that you do to the fullest, but also make sure you have time to do everything you love, which in my case certainly includes music, but also includes many other things. And it's always been very important to me not only to live within one path, sort of.
From your standpoint, can you talk about what you get out of recording something? Like, that experience must yield different things for you from performing live on stage.
Recording is something that takes a lot of energy and a lot of preparation, or at least the way I approach it. I always believe strongly that a recording has to be something you're proud of. And unfortunately, not every performance can be something you're proud of. So you need that special preparation and that special understanding of music, that those hours spent reading the score, practicing, thinking about it. You really live the music for a long time before the recording, and quite a while after too, because you're listening to the takes, you're still processing it all the time.
And so I imagine then when you're taking it on the road and you're
it's
playing,
it's like an old friend.
Yes.
Because the recording was done in August of 2018, and then the edits and the listening was in October, and then since then I haven't played it, and now I know I'm going to play it a lot, and so coming back to it was like coming back to something that you know so well, and yet you have a fresh mind about it. You, because I haven't been living in Mendelssohn's music for the past 4 months. I had a break from him, but now I'm back. And so you have all these ideas again that come back to all these trouble spots that you're once again practicing, but that give you joy once again because it's new. It's as if you're reliving it.
Can you sum up what Mendelssohn means to you?
It's hard always for me to put a few words on a certain composer, but Mendelssohn teaches you a dedication to what he wrote in the score, to what he put on paper, also to every note, because when you're playing certain parts of each one of these works, you aren't given something to latch onto, a certain clear memory, melody, or harmony that just says, ah, yes, this is beautiful, and that's what I can focus on. Sometimes you have to focus on every single note to make sense of it. And that dedication, that understanding of every line is something that you can take to any other composer. And I always try to, but working with his music so extensively brings it sort of into the forefront.
So it really informs your approach to
always.
Everything.
I mean, the way music works is that any experience with any composer will influence another experience with a different composer and will change the way you approach it too.
So what are you most excited about coming up?
Well, I'm excited about this week very much. Working with Philadelphia and with Yannick is always a great, great joy, and going to Carnegie is always exciting. So that's a fun thing that I'm still sort of in the moment for. But my year is full of concerts and full of incredible engagements in North America and in Europe. I'm touring extensively with Orpheus, with these Mendelssohn concertos in Europe and in North America. I'm playing at many summer festivals on both sides of Atlantic, with Philadelphia and Saratoga, with Boston at Tanglewood, in Aspen. So keeping myself busy, but enjoying different places that are also beautiful in the summer.
That's great. Well, thank you so much for stopping by WRTI, Jan Leschetzky.
It's such a pleasure to be here. Thank you.